Hello, and welcome to the Personal Wealth Coach. It's releasing the weekend Saturday, the 13th of April. Friday the 13th falls on a Saturday this month.
Yes. And that's good.
Yeah.
It's kind of like having an eclipse or something.
Right. So we've had an eclipse. That's a cool thing. We're going to talk today about the latest consumer price index, some and other exciting things like China. That's probably pretty exciting in itself, but looks like inflation numbers came back a little bit different than what a lot of people expected. So we'll talk about that on the other side of this fantastic and amazing bagpipe music. Welcome back to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jake and
Jeff
McClure. Together we are bald, bearded, and the Personal Wealth Coach. The Personal Wealth Coach is not just the name of this podcast. It's also the name of the firm that we found. It is a registered investment advisory firm. Who's it registered with? The Securities and Exchange Commission. Does that mean that they think that we have some great level of expertise? No, they've got some basic requirements and that's about it. We think we've got some expertise, though, but if the reason why we tell you who we're registered with and why we do that is because it's a requirement of being registered. It's kind of like displaying your driver's license when asked by the police. We're registered with the SEC, and if we say something that endangers the public, not just our normal font of nonsensical and silliness, but something that might damage somebody, then you should come to the SEC. Actually, we would probably be there first, but, you know. That's just how we are. And just because we're registered to give investment advice at the fiduciary level doesn't mean we can do that on a podcast. It defeats the definition of being private and knowing the person we're talking to. So if we're not giving advice, what the heck are we doing talking to? Didn't you want to learn something? Well, yes, it's education. We run education camps, and if you really need it, we can do a re-education. Wait.
No, thank you.
No.
No.
We like to call it Gulag 101 and keep the air conditioning in Siberian winters turned to a reasonable. No. All of that was silliness. Please don't report us to the SEC. You have a disclosure for us.
Oh, yes. The information we present in this educational podcast has been obtained from sources we deem to be reliable, but we make no warranty or guarantee as to the accuracy or completeness of such information.
Or unsuch information. We do, however, warranty and guarantee that any information that we do not provide on this podcast is complete. There we go. Unless it's complete when we give it to you, but not on the podcast. Then it would be incomplete in podcast.
Oh, boy.
Yes. We have to make sure everybody's safe, so we have to tell them, close cover before striking as the match be served hot like coffee. Yes. So we're going to talk to you about the CPI and other weird number letter combinations like that. CPI, Consumer Price Index. What the heck is that? Well, the Consumer Price Index is sourced from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the Labor Department. Laboring, giving consumer price indexes. All of this is a good way to get kicked out of a five-year-old's birthday party. So if you have an intent to not be at a five-year-old's birthday party, this is the subject of choice. Consumer Price Index came out Wednesday, April 10th. That's the day we're recording this. And it came out with a little bit of a shock to a lot of people. It looks like, according to this index, that inflation is running about 3.5% before seasonal adjustment. Now, seasonal adjustment typically takes place this time of year. Crank the number down. You're making some weird clicking noises with your headset.
Sorry.
I'm not sure what that is. Or it could be predator and you have found a target. That's concerning. You could
that
do it
accent,
again. There it is. Oh, dear. Yes, the predator is gone. Okay, so the CPI came out. It says 3.5%. And then when you look at, well, I know that the Federal Reserve prefers to look at core inflation numbers. That means take out food and energy. But
it's worse.
It gets worse because food and energy prices are down right now. And people go, what? I've never heard of this. So the food and energy stuff came down. Why is it going down? Why is it food and energy is going down? Well, there's a couple of easy answers to that. We're into late spring. When you're in late spring, harvest begins to occur. I know that's weird that food prices would follow the laws of supply and demand, but it's true. You also tend to get more natural gas and oil out of the ground as time is easier to pump it. There is a freezing temperature and slurry that forms in pipes and so on. So at this time of year, there tends to be a downward movement in the price of energy. We are producing more as well, but it shouldn't account for the fact that Russia's lost about 17 or 18% of its refining capacity, and we have big sanctions on Russia and on Iran about exporting oil. Nigeria is not exporting as much as it was. Did you want to add something to that?
Well, I want to add something to the CPI, and I think that's
important. Go ahead. Please do.
It's actually a little worse than the 3.5%,
yes,
or even the 3.8% if you take out food and fuel. And that is because the last 2 months, it's been up 0.4% per month, both in February and March. Now, before that, during September, October it was 0.1%, November 0.2%, December 0.2%, January 0.3%, and now 0.4% and 0.4%. If you run 0.4% for 12 months,
yeah,
you're at 4.8%, actually a little above 4.85 or 4.84%, which is much higher than the Federal Reserve's going to be comfortable with. And I think the reality of it is there is a secular change underway that has nothing to do with short-term interest. And the secular change is we are in the 20s. We're in the roaring 20s. We have an economy that is booming. We're hiring a lot of people. They're making good money. We have amazingly low unemployment. And so people have money to spend. They want to spend it on things. They're buying things. And supply and demand comes into play at this point. And there was another article in the Wall Street Journal this week that I thought was very, very well put and very prescient in this case, that the Wall Street Journal surveyed small businesses, or they actually had the Small Business Association, I think it was. Anyway, they surveyed small businesses across the United States. They are raising prices.
Yeah.
The big corporations aren't raising prices. In many cases, they're dropping prices. But small businesses across the country are raising prices, and there's a reason they're raising prices. They're still having trouble hiring people, and they have to pay the people more to get them to work than they did before because there's a shortage of labor, particularly skilled labor, which means they're raising the wages to get the people to go to work because we have very low unemployment. And at the very lowest end, at where manual labor is going on, the wages are not going up very fast at all because we have an influx of people to fill those positions, and that helps. But in the middle, the small businesses are having to raise their prices. And if you go down in the CPI report that just came out, the price rises are mainly in services, less energy services, the services.
Transportation.
Up 5.4% in the last year.
Now, another one that's up is shelter. So house prices are beginning to go back up again. And we got negatives when it comes to used vehicles. So people say, why is it that we're not seeing reversal of these horrible price upticks? You are in certain areas. If you're living in Austin, home prices have not recovered. If you're going to sell a vehicle, you're not going to get as much as you would have gotten a year ago, and you're certainly not going to get as much as you got 2 years ago.
The other thing is, as important as the CPI is, and the fact that we're having a higher inflation rate over the last 12 months, which means there's a couple of things. The other thing is, don't settle on what's going on until we get to the PCE index, which is one that it comes out of the Commerce Department that the Fed pays a lot of attention to.
Yeah, we prefer that one too.
But I think we've got a secular thing. I think we've got a secular movement going on here. I think we're going to see longer-term rates continue to rise. They have been. I don't think, and the higher, longer mantra out of the Fed is probably true.
Yeah.
Interest rates are going to stay up for some time.
Now, I'm going to throw in a definition here, because you keep saying secular. We know what that means. To most people out there, secular means a government that's not controlled by a religious organization. That's not what we're talking about. In the economy, economists tend to use words that already have a definition and then change them on you just so that we can sound smart, just so that you should. Secular in economics, there are cycles in the economy. Normal cycle, like from the 1960s through the 1990s, we had a recession every 4 years, and it was almost, we call that secular or cyclical. It's just a normal cycle. And we followed that through all the way. So we had one in 98, we waited a little bit and had one in 2000, 2002, and then we didn't have one for a while, like 5 or 6 years. And then we had the Great Recession. This was a secular recession. and it had a lot more to do with the underpinnings of the economy. A big shift in the way things were done. Laws had changed. The way we did business had changed. Big things in the underpinnings had moved around that caused a bigger secular thing to occur. We're looking at that again. There have been some secular changes. We've started in the pandemic, but it hasn't stopped. Where we buy things, who we buy things from, who's making things, what jobs are being filled by whom. All of that stuff is different now. When people say it's different now, people say, well, there's nothing really different. It isn't. I mean, we've had changes that are like this in the past, but it is different than it was 2 years ago. It's different than it was 6 years ago, and that's for sure. So this is a secular thing. Service prices are up. We don't have enough skilled people doing jobs. We don't have enough unskilled people doing jobs. We have a demand for more labor than we have. This is why the labor force is adding job after job after job. We said this last week that, hey, expect the Federal Reserve's drop interest rates to be toward the end of the year, if not the beginning of next year. And this CPI report kind of goes right. When we see this kind of job growth and this kind of wage growth and the amount overall growth in the economy, that leads to a lot of money moving around. Getting paid more, you're usually spending more. That means more money's moving around. That makes it easier for people to raise prices. So we're not all the way through inflation yet, down to the 2%. We flirted with it really, really hard at the end of 2023. We were looking at it and saying, hey, things may not have to go as bad as we expected them to because our overall inflation is coming back down. But then the economy heard us say that and said, okay, we're just going to grow even faster. So we're starting. This is weird, but I'm going to agree with Jamie Dimon. We might see late in the year increase by the Federal Reserve. I'm putting it on the table there because we're seeing the economy picking up speed, even with the interest rates where they are. They have a very clear target. Let's get down to 2%. They'll be happy at 2.5. 3.5 is not where they're going to be happy. And we're kind of hovering up there. If we just continue February and March into the future, we're at 4.8, 3.5. So just be aware that there may be a rise in interest rates coming up. What does that mean to everybody? It means that bonds are still not a good place to jump into unless you're going to hold it all the way to maturity. We're still careful on that. And it means that if you're about to refinance your house, you should probably do it because longer term rates are rising even. Okay, back to you.
There's another aspect that's going on out there. And it's certainly not an absolute. The future, as Yogi Berra is reputed to have said, predicting is really hard, particularly when it's about the future.
Right. And the future is just not what it used to be. Yeah.
That's true.
Another one from him.
And that place is so busy, nobody ever goes there. And
yeah.
The index of global commodities prices, the S&P GSCI, has advanced 11%. What does that mean? That means things like copper and aluminum and steel and wheat commodities are rising at an unusually fast rate. That is indicative of a supply-demand imbalance. Now, some of that in the food side of things out there, partially because of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. But the metals are not. And we're seeing metals across the board rising much faster than inflation. Like I said, they're up 11% so far this year. That is indication of a rapidly growing economy. And where is the economy doing all this growing is the question.
I mean, the United States, definitely.
The doldrums.
Right.
Europe's economy is in a slack. Russia's economy is running backwards. So basically, we in the United States, with our economy booming ahead, we are booming, are causing the global commodity prices to rise. And global commodity prices are one of the most reliable predictors of what's going to happen over the next 6 months to a year in the economy. I think you're right. It's entirely possible we could not see a lowering of interest or short-term interest rates at all this year, which wouldn't break my heart, by the way, because there's a lot of people making some really good money in money market, treasury money market now, and we're happy about that. As a matter of fact, we could see interest rates rise a little bit down the road. And so just depend on that and look at it. The future is always uncertain, but I think through the rest of this decade, the general direction of interest rates will not be down, but up.
Right. So we mentioned China in passing. That's the other area I have to talk. China is definitely a world player to trade, and they have been having some difficult times at home in their economy. Essentially, the real estate portion of their economy has cratered, and that's a good quarter to a third of their economy. Add on top of that, foreign direct investment in China continues to fall. It's down about 20% from a year ago, and a year ago was down from the year before that. That's what has been funding their economic growth in the manufacturing area. And I want to underline this, put it in italics, put it in bold. The growth of China as the world's factory was not paid for by China. It was paid for by the people that went there and built the factories. So if a U.S. company or a German company went to China, they had a deal with a Chinese company to run a plant. They had to have a sister company to do it because China wouldn't let it just be a German company or an American company. And people might get a little bit upset about that concept, but if you look back at history, the Europeans were really fond of just taking up land, making stuff on Chinese soil, and using the Chinese sort of as slave labor. So there's good reasons for them to say, hey, we don't want that to happen. We wouldn't want it to happen here in the way that it happened in China. Okay. So German companies, American companies, French companies, all kinds of foreign investment went into China, paid for the factories to be built, hired the people to run the factories, trained the people that they hired to run the factories, and then did quality control for those companies. The only part of that that didn't get handed over completely to the Chinese in this long process over several decades of manufacturing in China was quality control. Because for some reason, Western companies could not train Chinese people to do quality control. That may be painting with a really broad brush, but the vast majority of the quality control of manufacturing from Chinese companies that were creating Western stuff, for lack of a better word, had Western quality control. Now that not just money is slowing down over there, a lot of people that initially invested and have been there for a long time have left. So there's this concept of sunk cost. Somebody already built a factory, so we might as well use it. Well, we cut all that off during the pandemic and after. China just displayed that they were not reliable as a manufacturing partner. So they left. And we've talked about Lululemon and how their plants that they paid for and built in China are now their direct competitors on the different Chinese trading websites that, you know, if people say it's cheap Lululemon, it really is. They're using Lululemon equipment that was paid for by Lululemon, but Lululemon has now left and gone to Vietnam, Brazil, or to Thailand, or to the United States. So the quality of the merchandise has dropped a lot, but so has the price. Why has the price dropped? Because they're having deflation in China. It's not good deflation. It's bad deflation. People are getting paid less because there's less money to pay people. Foreign investment is down. The real estate market has collapsed. You put that all together, and they're paying people less money, and they're still manufacturing plastics, which are what go into linen clothes, by the way. They're plastic. They're just special kinds of plastic, very advanced forms of plastic. But it's plastic clothes. The kind of plastic being used in these knockoff products, I shouldn't call them knockoffs because they don't have a label, but they sure look like the same designs. It's a lower quality and the thickness of it is thinner. So you'll find it falling apart in your washing machine after a year instead of after 5 years with Lululemon. It's still going to fall apart. You're not going to have a wool shirt for 40 years made out of plastic. It will start to fall apart eventually. So all that being said, China's got some problems. And I know you have a whole bunch to talk about on this topic. So I'm going to hand it back to you.
Well, there's a fundamental conflict. China's economy could be doing very well, but there's two major issues that are messed up in China right now. And they all come back to one thing, and that's the government. The real estate debacle is there because the Chinese government made a decision that they did not want a recession, and they didn't have one during the Great Recession. And since then, they have maintained their economy without a recession. And there's a couple of places in the world where they maintained the economy for an extended period of time without a recession. One was the Soviet Union, and the other one was Japan. And Japan then had a lost decade when they had a recession that lasted 10. China is coasting into exactly that same position, but they're doing so at the same time that their leader is cracking down on free enterprise and making noises like he wants to declare war on somebody, Taiwan.
Go ahead. I can't see that you're looking at me because you're looking at a different screen. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, right. It's okay. So I wanted to throw in a term that I could weakhorn, and that's the cattail theory. So we know about the bullwhip effect. We had that a lot during the pandemic where supply would suddenly arrive in mass and it would oversupply people, which would put that had been working overtime to create the supply that we didn't have out of business because it wasn't available anymore, or too much was available, or no, it's not available anymore. That's the bullwhip effect. The cattail effect is when you have institutional control set up from whatever the governmental authorities. I developed this term when studying the Roman Empire, but looking across every economy since then I see it. The longer the government controls the economy to prevent all downturns, the greater the eventual downturn at the end of the control. And I call it the cattail effect because anybody that's ever owned a cat, you can have a cat sitting next to you, semi-happy, with a minor flick in the tail. So you, as the authority, say, hey, I don't want to see the cat being annoyed. I'm going to reach down. I'm going to control the tail. So I'm going to put my hand on that tail and hold it still because I don't like to have the little flicks that I'm seeing. And it works really well. That cat tail won't move. But as soon as you let go, that tail is going to lash everywhere. And that's what we're afraid of happening. Afraid is probably not a good word. It's not like feeling adrenaline and fear. We have concern for the Chinese economy because they were letting up that authoritarian control. And then they squeezed down really hard. And in the process of squeezing down, they didn't squeeze down on some of the tail. The real estate part of the tail wasn't squeezed so hard. And that part started flicking all over the place, even though the tip was held by the government. Well, now the government is letting go of the tip of the tail to reach up and grab the part of the tail that is the real estate market, which means the manufacturing part of the tail is starting to swing. Just ask Europe about this. Just ask Janet Yellen, who's just been talking to the Chinese on the subject. She's been over there saying, hey, what you're doing with allowing subsidized, government-subsidized goods to be sold on the world market with your deflation already occurring is cheating. Your government is propping up your economy at the expense of every other manufacturer on the planet. And it's not a solution. Until you have an economy that's built on buying your own stuff, like the United States does, this is what's keeping us afloat, you're not going to avoid recessions. Your only way to avoid recessions is by the government stepping in and doing something that's going to cause worse effects later. So during the Great Recession, they avoided the recession by pumping a lot of government money into real estate. Well, the piper is getting paid right now, which is a phenomenal little statement about what happens at funerals. You got to pay the piper at some point, and the piper would play at the funeral. The real estate market of China has been overblown for a long time. Debt's been rising. We've been talking about this probably 10 years, about the debt-to-value ratio in the Chinese real estate, and that there's not going to be a happy ending to that. There never is. Well, they're experiencing it now, and now they're focusing on the only portion of their economy can think of to pull themselves out of it. So this is a prediction Jake can agree or disagree at your leisure. Quality of goods from China is already falling. Expect that to increase as prices can fall, goods from China. And you may think, hey, prices coming down is fantastic. And it will be, so long as you don't look at how many times you have to buy the same product to replace the last one that you had. And when you add it all up, you're not spending less. This is one of the difficulties in teaching people at a young age how to make good decisions in finances. Don't buy really, really cheap furniture and replace it every year. Save up for a nice piece of furniture one at a time, and then don't replace it for 30 years. You save a tremendous amount of money by paying more up front. And that's true in that the demand for U.S. goods is rising as the demand and quality for Chinese goods are dropped. Back to you, Afnish.
Oh, you finished your soapbox?
Fairly well. My feet are clean.
Oh, okay, good. Well, overall, we have a world economy that's moving ahead slowly, being led by us, or should dragged along by us. The danger, and this is a serious danger, people keep poo-pooing it and think it's not serious, but it is that China will get in a bad way economically and feel obligated to go to war, which will make everything bad everywhere. Russia is very much in the same position, and I am frankly a little disappointed that we're not on top of the fact that World War II became World War II because Hitler was allowed, and Germany was allowed, to take little bits of countries, little pieces of countries, claiming they had the right to those countries because the people spoke Russian. And it ultimately devolved into World War II.
Hitler was doing it because they spoke German, not Russian.
They spoke German.
You're correct. The analogy you're laying.
But Putin is doing it because he stated anywhere that used to be part of the old Soviet Empire is fair game, which is pretty much the argument that Hitler was making. So we got a couple of big risk factors on the horizon that we literally could do something about, but I don't. It's a little bit scary at this point.
Yeah, I want to give you some kudos here. You write the newsletter in here. It is I accidentally 15. Accidentally meaning I was going through stuff. I saw it and I said, I wonder what we were talking about back then. And I pulled it up and it was about Russia. And there was a pretty good section on China as well. And it said, hey, the Russians are spending a huge amount of their GDP defense. And it doesn't look like it's going to be as defense. It looks like it's going to be as offense. And that when economies, like in the past, when economies are shrinking and more money is being spent on the military, we can expect an invasion somewhere. You said you didn't know in this little part of it, you didn't know where it was going to be, but look to the west along the borders in non-NATO states, because those are the easy targets. Well, congratulations. some things you may not want to be right about that you are right about. What you're saying right now about China is absolutely in the same category. They're spending a lot of money. They're ramping up their defense spending while their economy is shrinking. What does that mean?
It amazes me. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's it. What does that mean?
Okay. It amazes me that Janet Yellen was just in China and she said relations are improving and you're trying to get things back on track. And there's a lot of people thinking things will get back on track and we're going to get back on friendly relationships with China somehow.
We said that with Russia.
The Chairman Xi has said again and again and again. And in 2027, they are invading Taiwan. And they are building up their military and spending a tremendous amount of money in a shrinking economy to build up a military that's pretty clearly oriented on taking Taiwan. Taiwan is democratic, and that's our religion. That is the religion of Western Europe. That is the religion of the United States. Democracy is what we believe in. We don't believe in dictatorships. We don't believe in communist dictatorships particularly. And I am actually dumbfounded at the thought that somebody thinks, while the president of a country who's effectively the president for life, a dictator in effect, says, I'm going to invade a country that you've said you'd go to war if I invaded, and I'm going to do it in 2027, but our relationships are getting better. I think they are they're being very successful in pulling a fast one on us.
Now, all
it's not a pretty picture.
Yeah. All of this being said, we're extremely optimistic for this. We're also optimistic for a lot of emerging economies of the world. Not optimistic about China, not optimistic about Russia. There are some serious, serious, serious things there. And why are we bringing this up? Because it wasn't for us that long ago that we were optimistic about both of those countries. Russia and China were opening more and more to outside growth investment. And they've got histories of this where you have this back and forth. Peter the Great opened up to the West and became West until he attacked somebody. And then everybody said no. And now he's an enemy again. It's history repeating itself. Same in China. China big about, they are always China first. And we have to recognize that they have that as a mantra deep into the center of their being, that everybody else is second place. That's a very nationalistic approach, and one that anytime a country picks that up, the other countries need to start getting nervous, because it means we're better than you every time they say it. It's really hard to go into a nice equal relationship with someone who will clearly tell you that you're not equal. And that's where China is right. And I wanted to lay that out carefully. Do you have anything to wrap up for this one?
No, I've got plenty of things to worry about. We are short term. We're in an excellent economy. I am concerned about the rest of the world. People are not concerned about the rest of the world. That concerns me because we are interdependent with every major nation on the planet. And I don't think people appreciate that as well as they should.
So if you would like to talk to us not on the podcast, or if you want a question answered on the podcast, we do take those. We actually appreciate those tremendously. You can contact us either on our website, tpwc.com, thepersonalwealthcoach.com. There's a contact form. You can email us, Jeff at tpwc.com and Jake at tpwc.com. We appreciate the feedback, questions. On our website, you can also read our newsletters going back a long ways. I recommend it. See what we were saying a decade ago and how right we were, to look back 5 years, how wrong we were maybe. It's important to get a pretty good idea of what we're saying and what it means. We're obviously going to tell you right, tell you when we're wrong. And we're wrong sometimes. I think we've been right a lot more than we've been wrong. So that's just laying it out. If you would like to contact us directly with voice, there's a local line that on the weekends has voicemail, but the rest of the week during business hours, there's real live people and not in tree. That number is
254-947-1111.
Toll free, should you still have a line, of 1-800-914-7526. That's it. Thank you very much for listening. Until next time, this has been The Personal Coach.